Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Great Indoors. This is episode 10, the final episode of season 8, coming to you for the last time from MWC 2024 in Barcelona. I can't believe it. I can't believe this is the finale. This is the end. After 3.5 days, 26 incredible guests from all over the world and 10 riveting episodes, the season is about to close. And of course, we're going to bring it down, well, the curtain down, rather, in style for this final episode. And what are we going to talk about? Well, if we summarize MWC 2024 this year, it was extremely apparent. As soon as one set one's foot inside the Fira, it was all about AI. And not just AI on its own, but how it's also propelling and vaulting other technologies forward. And I believe one of those that still remains prominent, has been talked about extensively over the years, is IoT. Now, I'm pretty sure you remember what that term stands for, even if you had to use ChatGPT to refresh your memory for an instant. Now, the term Internet of Things has undergone significant evolution and expansion over the years, reflecting advancements in technology and changing market demands. Now, its initial concept, pre-2010, was an evolution from M2M, machine to machine. And the term was coined to describe the idea of connecting everyday objects to the internet, enabling them to send and receive data. And, you know, the projections were enormous. You know, in 5 years' time, X amount of devices is going to be connected. I'm sure we'll all remember those vast projections back pre-2010. Now, throughout the 2010s, IoT technologies gained traction across various industries, including healthcare, manufacturing, transportation, and agriculture. And this period saw the proliferation of connected devices, data analytics platforms, and IoT ecosystems. Now, to the present day, the rollout of 5G networks has accelerated further the adoption of IoT by providing faster speeds, lower latency, and greater capacity for connected devices. So what do things like satellite communications, generative AI, how do they play into that IoT story? Now, analysts still consider IoT to be a huge deal. Statista estimates that there were approximately 11 billion IoT connected devices in 2020. And by next year, that number is projected to reach 22 billion. It's going to double, basically, in just a short period of time. And various industries are already embracing this technology. Manufacturing, for example, 97% of manufacturers believe IoT will be crucial for future success, with 87% already implementing IoT solutions in some form. Research by Aruba Networks indicates that 60% of healthcare organizations have already adopted IoT devices, with applications ranging from remote patient monitoring to asset tracking. Agriculture is expected to grow at 15% from 2021 to 2026, driven by the adoption of precision farming techniques and smart irrigation systems. So I think it's pretty clear as we close out this incredible season, IoT is a big deal. Welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this can potentially help solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matthew Roberts, and joining me as ever is my co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So that's it. This is the final episode. There's not a lot more to say. We're going to get going. We're going to talk about IoT. And for today, we will be joined by Cameron Cornsey, the Vice President of Connected Solutions at AT&T, Mr. Anton Monk, formerly the CTO of Viasat, and he will be joined by our Divisional President of Communications, Media and Technology, Mr. Pablo Chela. So let's get going. So we're back. Another episode of The Great Indoors here at Barcelona MWC
2024. Really excited to introduce my next guest. This is a fascinating space that we're going to talk about. So I'd like to introduce Mr. Cameron Corsi, who's the Vice President of Connected Solutions at AT&T. So welcome to the Great Indoors, Cameron.
Oh, very good to be here. Yeah. Feels wonderful to be in the great outdoors. Indoors, exactly.
And what do you think of our setup this year? It's
wonderful. You've got two different levels here, and you're in prime real estate for Mobile World Congress, and this is the busiest I've ever seen it, honestly.
Yeah. I think they said 98,000 people, but I'm going to validate that number because I have the GSMA on later this afternoon, so they'll give me all the latest numbers, etc. But yeah, you're absolutely right. The days of the pandemic and when we started the Great Indoors are way behind us. So
98,000 of your favorite people.
Yeah. So Cameron, thank you again for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your history, your journey, and your role at AT&T currently.
That's great. So I started on this journey of Internet of Things. Let's just start there, not farther back. But in 2009, we called it back then emerging devices. It was entirely new. We did not really know what it was going to turn into. But we knew that from a cellular operator perspective within AT&T, that we were reaching about 100% penetration of smartphones.
Yeah.
And we had our network with the ability to serve additional customers, right?
Yeah.
So we saw the future being in different kinds of devices, not smartphones.
Yeah.
And ultimately that became Internet of Things. So I started out doing product realization and development, leading that organization. And since then, it has migrated into leading all of technology operations and product for AT&T's connected solutions. And we call it that because to deploy Internet of Things these days, you really think of it as a solution. It's more than just the device. You need to help the customer along the way to engineer things and to make sure it all works.
Yeah. No, and you're absolutely right. It's that coalescing of different technologies and things together to realize the solution with IoT that's been talked about for so many years, way back even when it was M2M, and as you said, it was emerging devices when you came in to own it. Now and then, it obviously IoT. And is the current definition of IoT? Is it how far is it from the original definition? And how do you think that's going to continue to evolve as we move forward? I guess the question is, what's the present definition of IoT?
You know, I think it might be a little more focused these days. For a company like AT&T, it's really around cellular IoT.
Yeah.
A lot of the early numbers that were batted around in the billions, tens of billions of devices accounted for devices that were connected through unlicensed means, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, many others.
It was a Zigbee, all these different protocols.
So now, of course, there's a big ecosystem of them. But from an operator perspective, we're really focused on how can you deliver this over the cellular network? And that limits the number of devices that we're talking about to some extent.
Yeah.
But it's still a massive number. And so we've seen great growth over the years. And I think we've narrowed down on certain verticals that really drive the industry faster than others.
Yeah, it is interesting as we look at standards and protocols move forward. One of the, I remember speaking to an analyst who was very bullish and thought that 5G was going to be the thing that vaulted IoT forward. What are your thoughts on that, Cameron?
No, I think actually, 4G has vaulted us forward significantly.
Right.
Once we got to GSM-based standards with 3G, now you've unified the world. With 4G, you get every operator in the world on that. Now you don't have to worry necessarily about which technology standard to use to work in a cellular environment. So that has helped more than anything. And in 4G, we specified two low-power wide area solutions. They're called Narrowband IoT and LTE-M. These two allow us to get to very low cost points for the devices, and that has helped to stimulate the market a lot. So they are actually considered in some ways 5G because they meet some of the definitions from massive IoT perspective, although they aren't the 5G waveforms. I think what 5G will do is broaden some of the capabilities that IoT will provide as you get into mission critical kinds of use cases that require maybe low latency and maybe edge compute capabilities. Those will help broaden the perspective of what we can do within IoT.
Yeah. And what barriers do you think you're still coming up against that are a hindrance right now with mass proliferation of IoT?
First thing is it's still too complex. I talked about the fact that, you know, we need to help our customers. We need to make it simpler for them. First of all, we need to simplify the whole certification process for devices around the world. It's very complex. You got to go to every country and meet their requirements. And then each carrier has their own. And that includes the SIM card as well, right? The device and the SIM. So we got to simplify that. Then we got to make it easy for the customers to know which device to purchase or which module to purchase. Right now, there's so many SKUs out there. They need to know what operator they're working on, what country they're in. And they have to know too much about cellular, quite frankly. They just need to use it, right? That's not their desire, is to have to understand our technology. They want to solve real use cases. And we have to simplify it and then make it simpler to provision. Because I think at the end of the day, that's what's going to make IoT take off to the next level, is simplification.
Yeah. And which industry right now, IoT is one of those subjects that there's always massive, there's a wealth of interesting, exciting use cases, right? Yeah. I think that's one of the amazing things about IoT is you can really dream or speculate and think about just such wonderful things. But which industry right now do you think is benefiting the most? And from your perspective, what's one of the most exciting developments that you've been part of in this domain recently?
You know, I think the biggest industry that has benefited has been automotive.
Right, yeah.
More and more vehicles are getting outfitted with connectivity embedded in them. And somebody might ask, well, why? You know, a customer can just bring their smartphone into the vehicle. Well, these radios embedded in vehicles can do a lot more than what you think. They can help you remotely start, lock and unlock, and you won't have the phone in the car when you're doing that. In fact, you might be doing it from your smartphone, right?
Yes.
So that's one use case. Another, there's a term in the industry called software-defined vehicles.
Right.
And what that means is really the auto industry is going through a rapid stage of innovation. They're becoming a lot more like smartphones on wheels, where they're software controlled. And when you do that, you're able to upgrade the vehicle over time, fix bugs.
Yeah.
Tesla does this and others all the time. And that's going to grow in use cases. And that requires cellular connectivity in many cases because the vehicle might be on the road. It would be hard to establish a connection with a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah.
So that has really been a key differentiator, I think, connectivity. And I think it will continue in the 5G era to grow. And it's an exciting area because we can do more than just the telematics kind of things for an automaker. We can help the driver. Number one, we can set up a Wi-Fi hotspot in there where they don't have to use their own smartphone to do that for kids in the back seat on a long trip.
I know about that one. Yeah.
And then in the future, the industry is moving into an area where this whole cellular protocol is going to be used for vehicle to anything to deliver a level of safety that will help to save lives on the road. And so what's exciting to me are use cases like that where you see IoT used for good, right? It's obviously good to make money on it, but it's good to have a great societal impact as well.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, with everything in IoT, with the talk has always been the billions and billions of new connected devices that are coming on, you know, the data that obviously comes out of the exhaust, if you will, of all the new devices. How do you ensure security, privacy of data when the magnitude becomes just phenomenal?
You know, that's one of the things that differentiates cellular connectivity, I think, from certain unlicensed ones.
Yeah.
It is really the fact that we have a SIM card that provides, first of all, a level of authentication that it's very hard to cause fraud as a result of that.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to hack. And that SIM card can be a root of trust as well that can help make sure that there are the right certificates on the device and you can do end-to-end encryption. Keeping the Internet of Things devices off the internet having a private connection is also something that we do all the time. So what we call it Internet of Things, maybe it would be better to call it non-Internet of Things.
The private network of things.
That's right. I think
that's it. PNOT. It doesn't really have, as a marketer, I need to work on that one. But I know exactly what you mean. That's really phenomenal. My next question, and I pause when I've done this because there's only one thing going on at this show, right?
Right.
This
week. It has two letters. It's a two-letter acronym. And it's not 5G.
And it's not 5G this year. And it's not metaverse. And we know what it is. It's generative AI. And so the question that I've been, and it's a bit of personal market research that I can use is, as just an individual in your everyday life or your everyday working life, Cameron, where are you using it since it came on the scene just over 12 months ago? And by the way, 90% of the responses have been absolutely unique.
Is that right?
That's correct. Honestly, and that's the thing that's kind of made me go, wow, every individual is using it in a unique way based on their own personality or creativity, call it what you will. So I'm interested to know where you're using it and what it's doing for you.
So I'm probably going to be very boring and give you a use case that you've already heard, but really it has been more in this whole area of internet search, quite frankly.
Right.
You typically would plug in a question to your internet browser and you'd get a whole list of information that you had to sift through. The first few entries are all sponsored and quite frankly, they might not be worth a whole lot, right? So you really have to dig through mountains of information, whereas you can ask this question to an AI and it gives you a more succinct answer. It might not fill in all the blanks, but you can ask it another question and get deeper. So that's what I've been using it for in a personal way.
Yeah, and that is a unique answer that you've just given. Honestly.
Kudos.
And I was listening to a podcast while I was walking my dog last week. It was one from the Tech Fort, the New York Times. And I can't remember the name, but there's a startup out of the Valley right now that's LLM is based entirely for that purpose, to optimize the internet search, also based on what it knows about you and learning about your preferences and anything. So it goes straight to what it believes would be what you're looking for. I wish I could remember the name. Maybe I'll edit the podcast and then put the name in there as for our listeners.
Well, here's one unique kind of AI use case that we've encountered that I find fascinating. It's really a personal AI.
Right.
So if you have all of your own information that you have, you know, put into this AI, then when you're not around, let's say this week I'm in Barcelona.
Yeah.
If my team, which is on many hours different time zone, needs an answer for me, If my AI knows enough about me, that AI can answer the question instead of me having to do it. There's a company that's actually doing something like that.
Really? Wow, that's really interesting, because I've heard in a more morose manifestation where when people have become deceased, their relatives can bring them back. and you should check out, there was a podcast by The Economist Weekender where they did that, and it was a really emotional, a really questioned ethics, but it was really phenomenal. I'll send you the link to this, because this one, but I love that idea that you're almost creating a clone of you to take care of things while you're away.
That's exactly right. But you know, the example that you gave, Today, we take memories from photos that may be in a shoebox somewhere, and maybe we're digitizing them, or we're going on to some website that you could find your ancestry.
Yeah.
You know, having something for two or three generations from now that really helps them to understand who the person was better than those photographs is really a fun thing to think about.
Oh, it is. It's incredible. And also those use cases where, you know, they're bringing back like Winston Churchill to have a conversation with John Lennon, and that they're building these things now. And it's just fun and interesting to see. Anyway, we could talk about it for hours. And I have been all week. When I get back to Canada, my kids really aren't going to want to speak to me because I'll be doing that. We've talked about this already, but I mean, the climate crisis that we're going through right now. I mean, IoT and many of the connected solutions we're speaking about is going to go a long way to start making progress against the biggest existential threat to mankind. Do you believe that, right?
You know, I believe it will have its place. That is such a large problem to solve that no one thing is enough. And IoT will definitely have a place in the solution. I think about some of the things that already have happened in this space that help us. There is a company that after the Fukushima nuclear disaster started putting sensors that are connected through cellular into Japan to sense the environment around there to figure out, hey, is it... is it safe to go into this area, right? There are IoT solutions that are monitoring the environment, even in cities to make sure that things are good and habitable for people. So, that's one thing that has already been done. And I can only imagine through the creativity of different individuals where this could go and how it could help.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So we're coming towards the end, Cameron, and I've had a fascinating conversation. I could speak to you for hours. Really, I could. So I want to thank you again for your time. But the way we finish the podcast is a quick fire round called TGI to go.
TGI to go.
Football or basketball?
Well, football, but American football.
Yeah, that's the cut. When I've been asking Europeans, they're like, are you saying soccer? But yeah, American football. And which team do you generally get behind?
Oh, the Kansas City Chiefs. They're the closest.
Yeah. But you don't live in Dallas, do you?
I live in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'm not the Cowboys guy.
So you enjoyed the Super Bowl then, of course.
Oh, that was a wonderful Super Bowl.
I thought it was fantastic. Now, we talked about your usage of generative AI before, but do you use ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced from Google?
Neither one right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made the mistake of asking a guy from Amazon that question. He's like, I use Bedrock, right, from Amazon. What are you talking about?
I'm going to stay neutral on that.
Yeah. Singing or dancing?
Well, I can't sing and I can't dance, but I like to hear people sing.
Right. Oh, right. So you like concerts or musicals, or which one would be the thing you would rather do?
I would say listening to music on my phone is the best thing. Yeah.
Cool. Now, hiking or biking?
Hiking.
Yeah. Is that one of your main pastimes?
It is. We have lots of trails around where I live. And then this May, my wife and I are having an anniversary. We're going to a few of the national parks in the United States, and we'll do a lot of hiking.
All right. Excellent. That sounds wonderful. And then my final question for today, Cameron, a bit of one that gets 50-50 back. Star Trek or Star Wars?
That is a tough one because I like both of them. I'm going to say Star Trek, though, because I started watching that when I was very young, some of the early episodes, and I think it kind of set the direction of where I was headed.
Well, thank you very much today, Cameron. It's been a pleasure to meet you. I'd love to invite you back on the show again and see how things have progressed. Maybe next year at MWC, or it'll probably be renamed Gen AI C or something by this time next year.
But it will still be the grade indoors.
Exactly. That isn't changing right for now. But thank you very much, Cameron. It's been brilliant.
Thank you. You too.
So here we are again, another episode of The Great Indoors at MWC 2024 here in Barcelona. Really excited to introduce my next guest to the show this morning. His name is Anton Monk. He's the VP and CTO of Wireless Initiatives at Viasat. So welcome, Anton.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
And joining me, he's becoming somewhat of an experienced veteran podcaster now, is Mr. Pablo Cella, who's the Divisional President of the CMT Division here at Amdocs. So thank you both for joining me. It's fair to say it's been an incredible show so far. But just for our listeners, Anton, just give a history of yourself and an overview of your role at Viasat, if you could.
Sure. I don't know if it's all relevant, but actually from South Africa. Mm-hmm. Parents moved to San Diego when I was 19, made it easy for us. Went to school there, finished my PhD there, and got into the satellite business briefly in semiconductor world. And then in 2001, started a semiconductor company called Entropic Communications. We actually created a new technology and created a consortium and a standard around that called MoCA, which is actually deployed in some parts of the satellite community as well. And that's for networking, video networking, high-speed networking. And then went into the 5G world for about 5 years, involved in standards, 3GPP and research and the business side as well. And then joined Viasat about 5 years ago, working on a variety of topics there.
Okay, wonderful. And the reason I'm looking forward to this conversation is because we haven't spoken anything satellite so far in this season. So it's a very interesting area. What do you think have been the big developments in the last, say, 12 months? Because I think there's been announcements from handset vendors, from service providers. There's been some geopolitical announcements and issues in the press. But what's been the big things that have happened in the last 12 months that have really lifted satellite in people's minds?
Well, I mean, if you came last year and saw the number of satellite companies that are here, someone told me that there's, I don't know if this is true, 50, 60 plus satellite companies represented here in one way or the other. The worlds are colliding.
Yeah.
I think is an interesting way to put it. And the reason is because satellite used to be the separate thing. If you couldn't get coverage, it's for emergency use, it's for backhaul. I mean, Viasat has made a big commercial business in the in-flight connectivity space. If you fly many of the world's airlines, along with Inmarsat, who we acquired last year, you're probably likely to be using Viasat coverage. But what's new is that standards have come along.
Right.
And that did not exist before. The satellite world has been somewhat insular and proprietary because, at least in our case, we've always optimized the entire end-to-end network that we built and run. What's changed is that 3GPP has created a version of the 5G spec that supports satellites, supports the longer delays, supports the Doppler shift due to the satellite movement, the frequency shifts. And this, all of this takes time. This didn't start in the last year, but in the last year, you've started to see device manufacturers, chipset manufacturers, OEMs start to make these announcements. And so there's been there's been a massively accelerated effort and recognition that these worlds are coming together, and devices that you've commonly associated just with terrestrial and cellular will be capable of satellite. And it's not just will, we're not talking 5 years ahead. We're talking about IoT devices that are essentially available now. And even some OEMs, some handset and other devices for messaging that are available now as well.
So I think that was a really good point that you mentioned there at the beginning. The worlds are all colliding now, right? With the handset manufacturers, the standards. And what about in the service provider space? How are they embracing the technology that's on offer here?
I think in a significant way, we've seen a huge interest this show. There's been announcements by various companies, but you can't do satellite without satellite service providers, and you can't do satellite without spectrum. It's the king, as always.
Yeah.
Satellite spectrum works in a different way to terrestrial spectrum. There has to be coordination. There has to be different types of licenses that are approved. We're in a Viasat is in a strong position there through our Inmarsat acquisition. We hold the rights to global L-band and S-band licenses. These are critical bands for direct-to-device, which we'll talk a lot more about. And those are the bands critical because they're in ideally situated in within the cellular bands, but also because they're already licensed for use and there are satellites that already support them. So there's no interference issues. We can talk more about the interference issues related to the alternatives, which is using terrestrial spectrum instead of satellite, licensed satellite spectrum.
And what have you seen here? You talked about devices. And you said that you interested me just in our earlier meeting about some of the devices and use cases that you've seen spring up that you think are really fascinating, Anton.
There is a lot that are coming that are not announced, I would say. The ones that have been announced over the last year include sort of early entrants into the market. It's a company, a UK company called Bullet, for example, that has developed both a smartphone that supports NTN, but interestingly, I wish I brought it with me, a little puck device. It's like a MiFi device, but instead of connecting to Wi-Fi and Bluetooth to your phone, it connects directly to geo satellite, this tiny puck, which some people find hard to believe, but it's physics, it's a link budget, and it'll close the link to a geostationary satellite 36,000 kilometers up and allow you to do messaging, not voice yet, but messaging and emergency services. And what the market is trying to do, you saw it with the entrance 2 years ago approximately of Apple.
Yeah.
So Apple kind of led the charge and said, this is going to be a minimum requirement, SOS and emergency messaging.
And their marketing in the last 12 months was revolving around that as well, right?
Yep. And, you know, it's a good story that you can tell when you can, even if the amount of traffic is small, when you can say you've saved lives, that's incredibly compelling. So I think what you'll see is that'll become a baseline requirement for smartphones in the future. Of course, we, as the service provider, we want to see traffic over our network. So very rare SOS messages doesn't make a market for us.
Yeah.
So we want to help enable initially messaging and ultimately new services, voice and other services.
Yeah. And that's a really interesting point is, you know, the coexistence with service providers, the coexistence with handset manufacturers, what are those services that need to be realized from the monetization of Viasat to really take hold?
In the near term, I mean, there's two. The primary markets are IoT and messaging. I think that's what you'll... In fact, there's more IoT companies that have made announcements than others. So going back to CES and MWC last year, companies like Quectel and Murata, tell it that have made some announcements. There are many others, I'm sure, that I'm not familiar with. They're part of the ecosystem that has to evolve.
Yeah.
Right? That's sort of the chicken and egg that happens. Semiconductor vendors have to be there. The IoT module manufacturers have to be there. The device manufacturers, either these pucks or the phones themselves, have to be there. The infrastructure has to be there, right? The RAN side. So we have a partner named Skylo that has been an early developer of the NB version of the spec. Maybe we can talk a little bit about 3GPP specs in a while. Is there the different flavors depending on narrowband versus wideband or broadband? They all have to come together. And then of course, you can offer a satellite service, but the real scale of the market comes from the MNOs. I think there's a pretty clear recognition from the satellite companies that the customers, the massive customer base and scale is going to come through partnerships with MNOs. There are the models that are super interesting.
Yeah.
You could imagine that app manufacturers ultimately, like hiking apps, hunting apps, biking apps, could offer an extension to their service. They've got very strong customer connections and engagement. They could offer maybe $5 a month, upgrade your device so it supports satellite. But I think the real scale is going to come from roaming agreements and partnerships with global operators. And that's what we've seen a ton of interest in at this show.
One of these episodes wouldn't be complete without talking about generative AI. As an individual, what does it do for you right now? And the reason I'm asking you this question, Anton, I've asked this in every episode, this so far in this show, and every answer, pretty much 90%, have been unique. And I think what it shows is that the breadth of things that can happen in this space. So just as an individual in your personal life, What are you doing with it now? That
I'm not sure my examples would be as exciting as some of your other guests. I guess as long as my wife isn't listening, I can own up to using it to write a Valentine's Day card.
There you go. There you go. That's a unique one, right? There you go.
Yeah.
And what about you, Pablo? Because we had a big long conversation about this last night. Where are you using it in your everyday?
So, our job is to try in different applicability of the GenAI. Yeah. Personally, I use it for Copilot for writing.
Yeah.
It gives me a lot of free time using GenAI to help me in the writing. But I'm trying the part that really impressed me lately is the text to image, the creating imaginary out of a prompt. That was mind blowing and it's eye opening. I mean, this is just this. We are less than a year in.
Yeah,
we created these type of things.
Yeah,
well, not just images. I've seen the videos.
The video. I couldn't get my hands into the video generation because I didn't get the application yet.
Yeah,
but I see the demos and it's amazing. Now, you see a lot of this when you try different applications. You see this similar flair and all the images and all the videos. It's like it's similar style. I think that's going to change. But the fact that you can tell with five words what you want and they create a video, a set of images, it's unbelievable. Right. And this is just a silly example. There are many, many other things that come in. It's unbelievable.
I think the inflection point daily use will come when it gets integrated into Microsoft products, and Google products, and Siri. I guess there was some announcement today.
I
know it was an announcement, but Apple working on some of this stuff. When it becomes seamless and you don't have to download an app and play with it and then you get tired of playing with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Same thing happened when I got my VR headset.
Yeah.
This is amazing. Yeah. Play with it, show everybody, and then it sits on the shelf. That's not success.
Yeah.
But once it gets integrated into our everyday lives and helps us generate PowerPoint presentations and meeting summaries and Word documents.
Yeah.
That will change everybody's
life. It
becomes seamless.
And it was, I had Microsoft as a guest, Sylvia, just this morning. And she said, well, the way they look at it now, it's just infused in everything, right? It's not like a feature you'll stamp on a product. It's just infused and when you said about the Valentine's card, that's where, the only thing that limits generative AI is people's imagination, right? And how, where you decide to use it. And I was speaking to a gentleman from Google yesterday who said something really profound when he said, I don't believe that. He said, it's not just about people's imagination. He said, it's about the machine's imagination. Because the machines are now thinking of the creative ways on their own independently to apply it. For a moment, you kind of go, whoa. But I thought that was one of the really things that's going to stick with me after this show. Yeah.
Still, I think it's easier for us, first world, so to speak, to think about how it can enhance all of these already incredible things that we get to use. But maybe an equally or more important question is, how is it going to affect the lives of people, billions of people that don't have access to these? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, have you heard any?
Yeah.
How does it affect a billion people that don't have connectivity?
Yeah. Well, and I think the one thing that it was the CEO of Microsoft, Nadella, said at the in Davos at the World Economic Forum with Sam Altman. He said, and he's an Indian native originally. He said, normally when any new innovation or technology is rolled out, it starts on the West Coast of the U.S. Moves across the Atlantic slowly. But the thing that he saw that was the most interesting thing was the adoption in India and developing countries and the way people were creatively using these new tools to improve their way of life. Never in human history has a technological innovation sort of spread so rapidly and been. And he kept referencing the Industrial Revolution that happened in England took, 250 years to reach India. But now we're at a point where it reached India within weeks. And I thought that was really interesting.
And is it being used to generate wealth.
Yes.
Because when it's used, when it can be used for the purposes of new businesses, new business models by people that wouldn't have access to it before, then I think that's the real inflection point.
Now, of course, the examples he used were people in a remote village that had limited connectivity, and there was a guy there who was doing something great for the village and something watered. So they were pointing to some, you know, societal, you know, things that were positive. But to your point, and it could be used by nefarious and unscrupulous businessmen to monetize for their own benefit. But it's a fantastic discussion as we go forward. Now, we're almost out of time, Anton. I could have carried on talking. I mean, Pablo and I talked about this for hours last night. It was incredible. But we finish with our fun quick-fire round called TGI To Go.
TGI To Go.
The Clippers or the Sacramento Kings?
I'm a Warriors fan, but I love basketball.
Oh, that's your
thing. I love all basketball. Most primarily NBA. I didn't grow up watching it. In South Africa, it wasn't a big thing.
Yeah.
Clippers are awesome. And I love Kawhi Leonard. I love the way he plays.
So. Yeah.
I could go on a little bit longer, but
you must as a South African. So you left South Africa when you were 19.
Yeah.
So you must have been a rugby or a cricket.
Oh, I'm not a very good South African. Okay. My South African friends want to know what's going on: rugby, cricket, soccer.
Yeah.
I'm just a tennis player. So.
Yeah.
I'm a poor example of that, but I do love basketball.
Yeah. Excellent.
For me, it's the NBA from Larry Bird era. The new NBA, I don't know the big follower. No. I would rather say football. Real football.
That's okay.
So that's a different discussion.
When Pablo and I are not talking about generative AI, we're talking about football most of the time, Liverpool or so on. This is an interesting question. Question number two. I don't know where this one came from, but if you had to have dinner tonight with Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, who would you go for dinner with?
Ooh. You know, I tell people that Elon and I are basically the same. Both from South Africa. Our last names start with M and with K. So we need two letters and like five or six zeros that differentiates us.
Yeah.
If that's it. Probably pick Elon Musk.
Yeah. Certainly an interesting
character. I mean, incredibly bold.
Yeah.
Markets that have been developed, no doubt, either would not have happened. It would have taken a lot longer.
Yeah.
As an entrepreneur, and I have been one in the past, I know how challenging it is to do what he's done.
Yeah.
At SpaceX is just unbelievable. I mean, to be that bold, I know the other industries as well, but to take on the space launch industry, and also it's just one thing to be able to launch payloads, but to say I'm going to ferry astronauts to and from space.
Yeah.
Life is at stake.
Yeah.
It's just incredible.
It is.
Elon Musk.
Yeah.
No, because of the person, because of everything he has his hands.
Yeah.
SpaceX, Tesla.
Yeah.
Everything is disruptive.
Yeah.
Anything he does is disruptive.
Yeah.
And definitely will be a very interesting conversation. Yeah. I'm sure he's going to go around 100 different topics at once.
Yeah.
We try to keep up that.
Now, we've asked this question in different ways over in the years. We've always used sort of a tech figure, and we always have Elon Musk. Every single person says Elon Musk versus any other that we throw up there. So that's good. Right. So I'm sure you've had a lot of tapas this week and paella, etc. But when you get back home, would you rather have Indian or Chinese food?
Oh, you've asked this one before, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
I'll pick Indian food.
Yeah,
I don't have it often enough. Yeah. Well, I grew in South Africa. We had food.
Yeah,
it's one of the largest Indian populations outside of India. It's where Gandhi.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And growing up in the UK, we had fantastic Indian restaurants. Right, it's a little bit different where I live now, but
I thought you were going to ask what's the first thing I have when I get back. I'm from San Diego, so we're world famous for our fish tacos. So whenever I leave home, I come back
to some fish tacos. Is it lunchtime yet? Gosh, we always have to throw this question in at the wrong time.
You do. So Argentinian steak, that's what I will get. Yeah. I will put the Indian aside, Chinese aside, I will get an Argentinian steak right there.
Yeah.
When I come back.
Now, this is an interesting question. And I'll ask the question and then I'll explain it. So would you rather, going back to generative AI, use ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced from Google?
Well, my answer is easy. I'm not familiar enough with Gemini yet. So
yeah.
Use ChatGPT.
Yeah.
It's in my phone. It's easy to access.
Yeah. And this is and the same to you, Pablo, same question?
Well, I'm not familiar with ChatGPT.
Yeah, yeah.
But my daughter, she was for Google. She tells me the other one is better. So we'll try, try it.
Yeah. No, because there was a lot of noise before I got to the show about Gemini Advanced. I listened to the New York Times. And they were going, it's just fantastic. Google are back in the game. Da, da, da. And I've asked this question to every single person. Every single person said ChatGPT. Most people didn't even know what Gemini Advanced was.
I think ChatGPTs were available. Yeah, and once you started with ChatGPT a year ago, you already had some kind of subscription, application.
Yeah.
And there's enough to learn there.
Yeah.
So
that's such early days in the adoption cycle.
It is early days.
And how seamless will it be integrated?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, exactly. We all use Google to search, so things become integrated.
I made the mistake of asking that question to a gentleman from Amazon. Anyway, what? Do you think I'm going to use Microsoft or Google? I said, he said, I use Amazon Bedrock. And I said, of course. I said, is it any good? He said, yeah. And the final question, just to close it out today. Singing or dancing?
I love singing. I grew up singing. So I would do that. Dancing too.
Yeah.
I'm a singer.
Yeah.
It seems to solve all moods. Just when you're in the car and coming home from work, or it doesn't matter what happened. Music has that way to change your entire outlook for that.
Excellent.
For a brief time.
Definitely not singing. Dancing maybe with the help of a few drinks, but not really. I'm only quiet.
So we're out of time. We've gone way over time, but it's been a great conversation, Anton. I want to say thank you for joining us on The Great Indoors today. I want to invite you back now, next year, wherever we may be, to see how things are progressing and some of the things that we talked about today. Thank you, Pablo, for joining me again. It's always a pleasure. We've had a great great time, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your week in Barcelona.
Thank you. This is really fun. My first podcast. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the invitation.
Awesome. Brilliant.
Thank you to Amdocs for inviting me.
Thank you
very much for today's guests, Cameron, Anton, and Pablo. Thank you for bringing the season home in style. You know, thank you to all the guests, all of you, 26 of you in this incredible season 8 at MWC 2024. I've enjoyed every single conversation with all of you. I've learned so much. It's been fascinating. And if you haven't heard all the previous episodes for this season, please subscribe to our podcast on all the usual podcast channels. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. Also, visit our website, amdocs.com/The Great Indoors, where we have everything we've ever done over the past 4 years. Some incredible conversations, videos, insights. It's been enormous. Now, we'll be back in the fall for more great conversations with season 9. Wow, we'll probably hit the 100 mark during that next season. And again, thank you to all of you. Thanks to everybody we met in Barcelona. Thank you to Larissa. Thank you to our production team, Janie, Quill, Fatima. Thank you to everybody in Amdocs, particularly our events team that put on such a fantastic show for us this year in Barcelona. And until then, I'm Matthew Roberts. For Amdocs in Barcelona for the last time in 2024, and have a great day wherever you are.